Author of the Week with Jessica Burtis, Alex Lefchuk, and another fantastic Imagineer and word crafter providing inspiration for the 21st century. Seeing as how we're 23 years into the 21st century, it's about time we find some inspiration.
Okay, so you've been awarded the New York Mayor's Contribution to the Arts, the Outstanding Resident Artist of Arizona Award, and the Foundation's Award at the Blue Ridge Mountains Christian Writers Conference for 2016, 2019, 2021. There are more awards as well, but if we spent all the time talking about the awards, we wouldn't have time to speak to our ace author of the week today. That's the fabulous Dr. Catherine Hutchison-Hayes. How are you, Catherine?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Delighted to touch base with a good soul. If you're an author, a speaker, an educational consultant, an editor, was this always in the grand scheme of things? Did you have a strategy in mind to actually be a polymath from the off?
No, I started out in, actually I started out in medicine. I was a pre-med student. And then I ended up in education and I spent the latter part of my career as a school administrator. I was a school principal for many years. And I've always loved writing. I wrote for educational journals. I even freelanced as an author / editor for a local magazine in Arizona where I lived for a time. And it wasn't until several years ago when my husband was being deployed consistently, like 6 months out of the year, and we had a home full of children. And I just decided to take a short sabbatical. And during that time, I explored writing. And one thing led to another. And I was like, I'm not going back. And I created an entirely new career as an author.
We talk a great deal about transferability of skills and such like. And personally, I always found that my science degree, the first degree chemistry and biology, gave me a good bedrock to actually appreciate other things in the arts and so on and so forth. Did you find that your medical training also helped effectively establish your writing disciplines as well?
Well, I didn't think it would have, but later on it did, because I never thought that the pre-med degree would have connected with education and writing. And although I never did go into medicine formally, I still use a lot of that, some of that background in my thriller writing. And so I had like a thick skin to, you know, to go into like the medical libraries and see body parts and, not a lot turned me off. And so I'm able to use that background and knowledge and put it into my writing.
Well, we talked about your New York Award, of course. You also belong to the Florida Writers Association, and one of our key Floridian correspondents, although she's based in Lincoln, England at present, is, of course, Kathy Manso. Kathy, any questions you'd like to put to Dr. Hayes about life, the universe, and such like?
Oh, so many questions. So nice to meet you.
I love your name.
I love your name too. when I got to see your press sheet, I was like, ooh, this is fun. I never get to meet another Catherine or Kathy, by that matter.
Yeah.
Well, and I also noticed that you have your own podcast, Murder, Mystery, and Mayhem, Lace of Morality. And yeah. I wanted to ask you, because you get to talk to such excellent writers, is there a theme that you've come to find with all these writers when it comes to writing about whether it's the perfect horror or a thriller or murder, I suppose?
Yeah. So that podcast is really open to all authors. I've had children's authors on there. I've had nonfiction authors on there. One of my favorite interviews was actually a grief counselor who wrote an incredible book about grief. But yes, a lot of things that I see the same are, one, the author community is incredible. They are very generous, wonderful community to be a part of. They are very forthcoming with sharing information. I don't see this crab in the barrel mentality. they all want to help each other. And so they're so giving in terms of sharing about how they successfully publish a book. And yes, my sweet spot are people who write murder, mystery, and mayhem. That's what it just seems like the people who write the goriest, scariest, most thrilling kind of novels seem to be like the sweetest people. And so they're very unlike what they write. And so that's fun for fans to see behind the scenes, like, oh my gosh, so-and-so is a gourmet cook, or so-and-so raises honeybees. And so they're very much three-dimensional people with lives and families. And it's not this glamorous writer's life that they're constantly living. Thank you. That's a great question.
Oh, no. I mean, you get such a rare opportunity to talk to so many people. It's kind of always interesting to see the similarities kind of line up. And I've noticed this, like, different interior, exterior with a lot of different diverse groups. Like, whenever you think of genres of music, I think a lot of people think the scarier looking kind is like metalheads or grunge. But I can tell you there's some of the sweetest people who have you crash at their house forever long you need and feed you. And
that's,
you
gotta
watch out for those pop stars. So.
Yeah, it's those clean cut people you gotta watch out for sometimes.
I don't know, Catherine, you can't possibly mean the Osmonds. I mean, you know, for goodness sake. So, yeah.
No, not the Osmonds.
Yeah, exactly. Just want to clarify that.
They lost their trend when they went mainstream. I'm sorry, it's not the same anymore.
Well, speaking of murder, mystery, mayhem, things which possibly occur every so often in Dublin, and that's where we actually bring on board Jessica Burtis, where she's doing her MA in children's literature over there at Dublin. Of course, Jessica, any questions you'd like to put to Dr. Catherine Hutchinson-Mahays?
Oh my goodness, I feel like there's so much I'd love to ask you. I could ask about living in Mongolia, working there. I could ask about piano. I could ask about your writing, all the events that you run. But I think reading about this, I would love to know how you manage your time and how you manage your passions.
Oh, that's such a good question. In fact, that's often a question I post to authors about time because I'm selfishly trying to find out how they're doing it myself. But I am a morning person and a night person, which is a very bad, dangerous mix. I don't advise it. So I live by my journal and I live by my planner. I plan out my day I'm very detailed about my day. If you could see on the other side of my office, I transfer from my schedule. I put things on post-its and I have like pending, in progress, and done. And there's something very cathartic about moving my sticky notes. But whatever it takes to get your day accomplished, you know, successfully. And I also have a built-in virtual calendar for my podcast and also for my editing clients, so that we're not sitting on the phone wasting time about what time works for you. It's just I have my days automatically set up and my appointments made. So that's how I manage the time. And I go to bed way too late and I wake up too early.
Yeah, I relate to that. I understand that problem. It is dangerous.
Yeah, don't do it.
I mean, one of the key things, of course, is in terms of organization. I can reveal to the listener we coordinated this about 8 days ago in terms of time slots, etc. But what about the next level of AI? What about the notion of chatbots and chat GPTs, etc.? I mean, do you ever think that within a few years from now, people will suddenly type in Catherine Hutchinson Hayes and they'll get a whole draft of stuff that you might have written created artificially?
Hey, that's the stuff that kind of keeps me up at night. Because especially for creatives, I mean, we're all here creatives, right? And not only do I write, but I paint and I teach. One of the nonprofits I work with, Light for the Future, I teach students in Guatemala how to paint. So I have a whole high school full of art students, and that is really important to them because some of them are learning how to possibly make a living doing that. So you can imagine how that keeps me up of like, what about the children? What about if they can't, if they're not able to make a living because someone can just produce a painting by typing in something? So I'm hoping that just as the novelty of something like, remember when Kindle came out and everyone was on their Kindle and all that, but hey, all the old heads, you know what? We still went back to our regular books, right? There was nothing like the feel of that book, going to the library, going to the bookstore, or meeting that author and getting a signed copy of that book. So, yes, I hope that we take AI for what it is and we use it to help make our lives easier. It does. It helps in editing. There's some editing programs that do help your time management because they can do little chunks of things that you don't have to think about. But in the long run, I'm hoping that they don't take over our creatives because they're
Catherine, they may
really
already have
like
taken over. Who knows?
Well, they're just plagiarizing. I had an AI expert who writes. He anyway, and so he was explaining that AI is concerning because all they do is take from millions and millions of original creatives and then they come up with something. So it's never really authentically new. But he said the danger in that is that no one is ever getting credit. So they may pull something from your work, but you never get credit.
Certainly panicking an awful lot of educational people, especially now that Elon Musk has actually said we should actually pause on AI for about 6 months. And when Elon Musk says that, it's time to worry, I think. But there we are.
It's time to worry. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Okay, back to Kathy, I think. Any thoughts from yourself from a non-AI perspective?
From a non-AI. Okay, sure. Yeah. I can deliver that. I wanted to ask you because you are someone who's very clearly a master of many trades. And I want to know when did it come to that pivotal moment in your life where you had to decide on, I mean, I guess the career, the field, or that you were going to focus on, because you got a lot of plates turning. So when did you find that time to start adding that on too? And when did you make decisions to decide that this is what I'm going to do?
No, that is that's so good. Oh my goodness. In fact, I had a turning point in my life about, I don't know, 5 years ago where I was really busy. I love any workaholics here, any busybodies. Okay, so I love to be busy, and I love to feel like I'm doing something good. And I had to really take a hard look at my life and say, I had to sit down and write down what are my passions and my values, and how am I going to accomplish the goals that I have in my life, and how am I going to leave a legacy? I think legacy minded. I just don't want to think about when I'm here. And I was like, there are lots of things in my life that I have to that are good, but I have to cut out because they're not progressing me to the next level. And so my big things, I must have had about 100 things on my list. But I narrowed it down to really faith, family, culture, and actually mission. So it's like more four things. And so I have made sure that my life aligns to that. So there are plenty of opportunities that you get, and I have to turn it down because it's not progressing me to that legacy that I want to leave.
So you really ask yourself a question, essentially, like, does this serve a purpose for me in any of these categories that I seek? Yeah. And how's it been going since you've made this pivotal change in your life?
Yeah, I've been a lot more focused. Focused, and I've been able to get a lot more accomplished. And then I've noticed that even my networking opportunities are continuing to drive me to that focus because I'm continually aligning with things that are on that list.
Following this little piece, Catherine, we're focusing with Professor Gregory White on how he's motivating people to actually swim the English Channel, which is fine. It's only 18 kilometres, so I feel I should be up for it tomorrow, really. Only kidding. But in terms of that, the key thing is motivation. From your own perspective, how do you actually get that additional motivation? Because you've already shared with Cathy the sort of list of how you're doing it, but how do you motivate yourself when you get to start on a new project, etc.? Okay, this is it. And of course, keep that motivation going when it seems as though maybe it becomes more of a chore as opposed to a fun thing to do.
Yeah, well, I'm a person of faith. And so I do start my day with prayer, with reading the Bible and reflecting on positive affirmations. I really believe that even if you aren't a person of faith, that you should speak things as if they were. And there's something about writing your vision, repeating it, and working toward that vision. And I may look crazy in the day, but I have a list of things that I want to move toward, and I'm speaking it out. And sometimes sometimes that vision is so crazy. And I love to do vision boards. I have like this massive vision board that I have, and I've got all my affirmations and my goals and all that. And one time it just seemed so ridiculous. And I threw it in the garbage, and my kids found it because I work with them to create vision boards and all of that. And they scolded me. They're like, how could you throw your dreams in the garbage? You know? And so sometimes even those who motivate others and are intentionally optimistic, sometimes we need encouragement too. And sometimes the people that you've taught to be encouragers come back and encourage you. So just making sure you pay it forward, making sure that you stay on top of yourself, speaking things as if they were, and speaking, you know, giving yourself grace and speaking well about yourself. I find that especially women, we can be really hard on ourselves, and we can really be our own worst enemies, and the things we say to ourselves are really unhealthy. And so I've really tried to be careful about my own self-talk and just make sure it's positive and affirming.
I think that's absolutely right. I often say to students that if you actually connect with people who are always moaning about life, you'll be not surprised to see that they get more problems for what they're moaning about. Whereas if they at least take a more positive approach, it tends to pay dividends in the long run. But, you know, there we are. It's not new knowledge. It's knowledge which has been around probably for about 4 millennia, I think, and counting, really. But what the heck. Jessica, back to yourself.
Yeah, again, I just have so many questions. But what I'd really like to ask is how you begin to get your ideas for projects and for your writing. How does that kind of come about? Do you get a lot of inspiration from those mornings, reading the Bible and spending time with others? Or is it kind of things that you've thought about over time?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a book behind me that was my first book. I wrote a book with a co-authored another project with someone, but that was my first my own book. And it came about from conversations I had with my daughters and wanting to put that together to be able to speak to other daughters, you know, to leave that legacy. And it was just life lessons. And I, what I did was I had like a theme of fashion throughout the entire book, and I based it on the life of Coco Chanel and this little black dress idea. And I just loved her. I loved her story, first of all. It's just, she's just a cool person. But I just loved how this black dress was iconic, and it fits for all occasions. It doesn't matter about your race, your ethnicity, your size. We all, women all understand the concept of that black dress. And so I was just speaking to my daughters about how to dress for this world, how to be emotionally intact, how to be prepared, those kinds of things. So that's how I got the inspiration for that book. But then I also write nonfiction. I contribute to a couple of magazines and blogs. And that's just, I mean, they tell you what to write, and I just do that. But the thriller, I didn't know I was a thriller girl. And I began writing fictionalizing stories regarding my husband's career. My husband, without giving away too much, he worked for a section of the, it's like the CIA of the military here in the United States. And so there are lots of things that I was privy to that were declassified and just so juicy that I could write about. I mean, and some of the things that I write about in the novel, you cannot believe that this is true. And it is. I just fictionalize it. I just change it, the people and the place and all of that, and create these incredible stories.
We're looking certainly at a fifth of the story. What happens when you work for the highest security agency in the world, but you can't trust anyone? What if you return from overseas to protect your country, but the country didn't protect you anymore? Find out what happens when three close friends return from fighting the enemy abroad and are faced with the greatest battles of their lives stateside. Kathy, it could almost be your life story here. They try to stop their country and families from imploding before time runs out. I've got to say, actually, Catherine, really impressed with the animation on the website, drcatherinehayes.com, because initially I thought, what have you actually got a brush going through there? Of course, you're dusting for fingerprints, quite literally on the screen. You're dusting for fingerprints. Wonderful.
Yeah. That book comes out February 27th of 2024. And the publisher just recently approved the prequel that is just about done. And we're in the talks for other books. But that story is based on a series of real events that took place both abroad and here in the United States that are truly concerning, because they're about breaches in our intelligence community and in our national security, and what that means globally, what that means for our country, and how will it affect United States citizens in the long run? How will it impact the world? So what's scary about that book, it are the factual things in there that have actually taken place. You can't make this, like I keep on saying, you can't make this stuff up. Now, the fun stuff about making up the characters are to write. I wrote from a male's perspective, and the story is about three males, and they're really good friends. And one in particular, his name is Brock O'Reilly. And I had a lot of fun with that book. I thought I knew how to write men until I was nailed by my editor, who's a man, and my husband. And they were like, no, men are not going to hug it out. Stop it. So lots of fun with that book. I'm really looking forward to hearing what readers have to say about it when it comes out.
I don't know. I've occasionally been in situations where there's been a suggestion of a group hug. I have avoided it, but you know, that's by the by. So anyway, Kathy, back to yourself.
Oh man. I mean, we really appreciate your honesty in this time, Alex. Like, it's important for the research. And speaking for research, is there, because you it looks like you're a traveler, a lot of places you've been to and lived in. And I was curious, is there a country you'd like to go visit, especially if it could help with any sort of research you might have for your future project?
Yeah, there are a couple of countries I would love to live in. So one is Jamaica. My parents were born in Jamaica, although they're mixed. My mother is a descendant of Portuguese Jews, and her family ended up there. And my father was Scottish and Black. But there are many people who are diverse and end up in Jamaica. But it's such a unique, beautiful country, and the food is outstanding. So that's one place. The other one is Guatemala. There's just something about that country. It just feels like home. That the people are just, they're really wonderful and welcoming. Again, the food is incredible. So that's one. And then I was born in England. I know my accent is completely gone because I got here when I was little, but I have gone back, and I love London. And so those are three places that I could envision myself going back and living.
Ooh, Jamaica, Guatemala, and London. And it sounds like you're ready for New York. All those things could be found in Queens.
Yeah, and I grew up in New York, you know, so.
I see, so you get it. I wonder how you got a taste then.
Okay, so you know about Queens.
Of course, my dad's from Jackson Heights.
Oh, wow. Okay, so if you're a foodie, if you're a foodie and you're into history, New York is such a great place to go. There's so many nuggets of history there. Yeah.
And I feel like anytime you go back, there's always more than what you remembered. And you have to be like, well, I got to try this new place. I have to know if this is going to be as delicious as I thought. And it always is.
It always is. Yeah. So true.
Clearly, as we're heading into a culinary theme, I would be remiss in my duties not to bring Jessica back on board here. Because Jessica, I know the campaign to ensure that the North Carolina delicacies are addressed here needs to be raised. So Jessica, over to you, please.
Yes, we love to ask people if they've ever tried sweet tea or boiled peanuts before, which are both beloved in North Carolina, the South, just good food.
Yeah, I didn't know about this life until I moved to Florida, because my husband and I, we've moved around a lot because of my administrative career and his military career. And Florida, I did not know about this boiled peanut life. And I fell in love.
Yes.
And sweet tea, I had to stop because I was putting on weight eating the boiled peanuts and drinking the sweet tea. So there's that. But Jessica, I'm right there with you. That, and especially the spicy boiled peanuts. Hello.
Yes. Oh, it's so good. And you always have to get them from someone who's handmade them. You can't get the store-bought kind. They're just so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I've even taught myself to make them. So, and my girls love them. Yeah, I'll make them. Mm-hmm. There's a vendor locally who makes all kinds of themed boiled peanuts. He does Hawaiian. I mean, it's kind of sacrilege to true boiled peanut lovers, but he does jerk boiled peanuts with sausage in there. It's just all kinds of crazy stuff. So yes, Jessica, I'm loving the sweet tea and boiled peanuts.
I'm so glad we have another person on our sweet tea and boiled peanut team. Yep.
Conquering the world, one boiled peanut at a time, really. in terms of social media, I mean, obviously there's a Twitter site that you've actually got, which is Kay Hutch. I think people can access you there. Kay Hutch 0767, which sounds like a code in many ways. There's obviously a website, drcatherinehayes.com. Would you like to share with us any Instagram or LinkedIn areas in which people can actually follow you within the socials?
Yeah, I would love if people would do that. At LinkedIn, it's just my name, is Dr. Catherine Hutchinson Hayes, and Instagram, which I love, so many nice people out there. It's author Dr. Catherine. And I would love if you would connect with me. We can hang out. We can have tons of fun. And there are lots of fun things coming up. I have started a candle line for my book and a spice line for my book that has to do with the theme of the book. And so people have a chance to win lots of giveaways in terms of candles and all of that good stuff. You can see some of the candles back here in the background.
The power of the medium of audio. It works so well. We can see it in the mind's eye already from the point of view of the listener. And speaking of which, we've talked about obviously food and the importance of that. What about music? I mean, again, it's a standard question we put to most of our authors of the week. Do you have a particular soundtrack you like to use when you're writing? Is it a case of, well, as long as it's music by the Osmonds, I'm quite happy? Or is it somebody else completely?
Okay, so no, this is an amazing question. And I'm just shocked when people don't write to music, but whatever. I wrote a fifth of the story to all things Gregory Porter. Gregory Porter is a fantastic artist. His genre is sort of like blues, rhythm and blues, jazz. He has a huge following in Europe. In fact, I believe his wife is European, but him. And currently, the book that I'm writing now, that's more of a fusion of Afrobeats and jazz and classical piano. I don't know what that's about, but that's what the book asks for, and I'm giving the book what it needs.
Do you have a favorite Gregory Porter number you'd like us to dig out of the archive for you?
Take me to the alley.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, Kathy, back to yourself. Any closing thoughts at this stage?
How's life in Florida? I know her well.
Life is good. It is the weather is beautiful. We've got lots of sweet tea and boiled peanuts.
A former president has actually course, left you and has gone up to New York, so that's all good.
Oh yeah, we've got lots of drama. If you're looking looking sure. for other kinds of tea, we've got that too. I don't know, but if it's crazy, it's going to happen in Florida. That's unfortunate. I
mean, you got a lot of stuff happening. You got DeSantis problems, you got Trump problems, you got, you know, next people will be like, oh my God, those alligators. Yeah, those alligators.
Yeah. So yeah, if you watch the news, there's, if it happened, if it's weird, it's going to happen in Florida. It's going to be Florida. Yeah. I'm sorry. What can I tell you?
Well, it makes living in Lincoln mild by comparison, obviously. So I'll just say that's Lincoln, England, as opposed to Lincoln, Nebraska. Always needs to be clarified because you never
know. Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness.
And Jessica, any closing thoughts from yourself?
I would have to say, what is your most upcoming project that you're most excited for?
Yeah, I am really excited to, number one, be traveling to start my, this is a hot season for conference speakers and teachers, and so I am getting ready for conference season, and I love that. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm a real people person, and I love speaking to people, and then I get to be with other author people who enjoy speaking about the voices in our head, our imaginary friends, and so that's exciting. So I'm looking forward to going to several conferences that I will be either just teaching at or I will be attending. The second thing I'm really excited about are books that I am working with several authors on. It is so fulfilling, not just to see your book come to fruition, but to walk alongside another author and to see their books get published. That is so fulfilling. So I'm in the process of working with several authors to see their books completed.
That's fantastic. I was just going to ask, are they also Florida authors?
No, they're all over the country.
That's even more exciting. I'm guessing you're getting a lot of Zoom experience.
I live on Zoom.
Well, we started off this piece by sharing just some of your fantastic awards, Catherine. It's been a truly awesome experience, but we've got two final questions for you. And Jessica can ask the first and Kathy the second. So Jessica, question number one for yourself, please.
Yes. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Oh, I've had a wonderful time on Zoom with you guys today. It's been fantastic. Okay. This has been the highlight of my week.
Oh, wonderful.
That's a good start from that thing. And Kathy, number two.
Yes, and number two, will you be joining us again?
I would love to. I'd be honored. I have a question for you guys, though.
Sure.
Would you like to come on Murder, Mystery, and Mayhem?
Wow. Yes.
Yes. I mean, you know, you got Kathy, you got Jessica, you got myself. There we are, Murder, Mystery, and Mayhem in three, basically.
Okay.
I call Mystery.
I'm going to send you the invite. I can't wait.
Dr. Catherine Hutchinson-Hayes, huge thanks. Fantastic author of the week routine. Obviously, Kathy Manson and Jessica Burtis, thank you. Keep on keeping on. And yes, we'll keep watching for those murder, mystery, and mayhem tales coming through the ether.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I consider it an honor.
Well, they build their houses in preparation for the king, and they line the sidewalks with every sort of shiny thing. They will be surprised when they hear him say, take me to the alley,
Take me to the afflicted ones. Take me to the lonely ones that somehow lost their way. Let them hear me say, I am your friend. Come to my table. Rest here in my garden. You will have a pardon. Take me to the alley. Take me to the afflicted ones. Take me to the lonely ones that somehow lost their way. Let them hear me say, I am your friend. Come to my table. Rest here in my garden. You will have a pardon. Afflicted ones, take me to the lonely ones that somehow lost their way. Let them hear me say, I am your friend. Come to my table. Rest here in my garden. You will have a pardon. You will have a pardon. Oh, take me to. Take me to the afflicted ones. Take me.
Now, Serena Chan at the best of times is probably a challenge too far for most of us. But what about the motivation that you're going to need to actually do that? Something that Paralympic gold medalist swimmer Alice Tai MBE will be doing in the near future. And who better to actually talk about high performance swims and indeed how swimmers will need a great nutrition and training plan to actually cope with that? Then, of course, the fabulous Professor Greg White, sports scientist extraordinaire, performance coach and exercise physiologist. How are you, Greg?
Very well indeed, thanks. And yourself?
I'm great. And obviously sort of up for this interview. I've been psyching myself up for the last hour or so to say, it's Greg White, let's
That's
go with
spirit.
This.
But let's, Have you got your swimming trunks on?
No, that's a step too far, Greg. You know, there are certain things which you say no, but that we'd step away from that. But in terms of that motivation, I mean, you know, clearly people often kind of wake up with the idea of I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this today, I'm going to do that, etc. And then suddenly it's a case of, oh, and we kind of talk ourselves out of these kind of things. So what's the secret, Greg?
It's an interesting one, because the way that you phrase that, I'm thinking to myself, I probably wouldn't do it either. I mean, I think, you know, to some extent, it comes down to in part, to planning and preparation. Is that I think often this sort of ad hoc idea that what will happen is we'll wake up in the morning and we'll find the motivation and we'll actually do something. It very rarely pays off. I mean, occasionally it does, but very rarely. And I think that the key to it, particularly if it's a big challenge, it's actually about the planning and the preparation in order to then deliver on the project. So I think it's just about not expecting things to happen. I always say success is not a chance event. It's not just suddenly going to appear. You have to put the work in and the planning and the prep in order to make sure that you can be successful.
Now, there are a sensational six swimmers on this one. Obviously, Alice Ty and five further people who are basically taking part in this Optimum Nutrition's Channel More project. They've been working with you for the last few months, etc. How have you seen their progress, Greg? Has it been a case of there've been moments when you've woken up, you've shaken your head and thinking, guys, we've got to do this? Or is it a case of, no, they've been the perfect students?
Well, interestingly, we haven't actually started the project yet. And in fact, if you go onto the website, which is optimumnutrition.com, there is still a chance to become a member of the team. So I think the really exciting part at the moment is that albeit we've got really quite a short window in terms of preparation, actually there is still an opportunity to become part of the team and actually tackle the channel yourself, which would be really exciting.
Got to say, Greg, it's not going to happen with my own situation. So, I mean, tempting that it might be, and I was even using my time traveling things as I say, it's all be done. What are you anticipating? I mean, obviously, you've worked with people for a number of times from that point of view. I mean, over that sort of 5 month transformation, I mean, you've got a 21 mile relay challenge, which is the final target. You're looking to spend 18 hours a day in the water at 8 degrees Celsius. So it's cold. It might be messy. It might be, you know, problematic from that point of view. What sort of things will you be actually sort of applying to them in terms of how they actually deal with the preparation?
Well, I think, you know, the interesting thing about it is, and we spoke about it earlier, and that is that it ebbs and flows. I think often people come into a big challenge and think it's going to be exciting right from the start. It's going to stay exciting and it's all going to go well and things are going to keep progressing forward. And I think that the truth of the fact is that when you take on a big challenge, there will be periods of time where you just don't feel motivated to do it. There will be periods of time when you start to question, why am I doing this in the first place? And so, you know, it does ebb and flow. And so I think making sure that you understand that is absolutely crucial, because I think if you recognize and know that it's not all smooth sailing, it's not going to constantly go well, that effectively prepares you for when things don't go quite so well. And that to me is really important. I don't, the reality of it is really important, is that it is hard work. We've already said success is not a chance event. And it is the fact that you've got to put the work in order to bring about success. And in doing that, there will be times when you wonder why you're doing it in the first place. And so I think, you know, understanding that right from the very outset makes it that much easier to cope with. And when those dark times do come, you know that you're expecting them. And so therefore you can cope and you can deal with them. So it's a lot of work. It ebbs and flows. But I think it's making sure you keep an eye on the final product. And that is the end goal, which when you are successful, it's absolutely fantastic and life transformational.
We talk a great deal in education about transferable skills and people obviously having different goals. For some, it may be simply completing their PhD doctorate. It may be a dissertation. It may be a case of they want to actually improve their overall fitness, etc. Are these skills that effectively you're going through that, you know, we can develop, that we can actually apply so that people listening to this say, well, I don't really want to swim the channel, but I do have these challenges. Can I take baby steps towards fulfilling them?
Absolutely is the answer to that. I think many of the skills are actually transferable. And I spend an awful lot of time talking to business, talking to students of mine who are doing PhDs. You know. And it is the skills and the way in which we approach it in terms of the planning and the preparation, in terms of the setting of goals and then deconstructing those goals into short and medium term goals, all of those things become really valuable. So it's not just about big physical challenges. Actually, these are transferable skills across life, whether it's work, whether it's education, or whether it's a big physical challenge, or indeed even when it comes to things like health and transforming your health. The approach is very similar. Initially starting with goal setting, making sure you plan and prepare through that so that you can actually deliver. You can use this across the entire life.
In many ways, Alice Tai, Paralympic gold medalist swimmer, she's the front of this campaign. I mean, she's an inspiration in so many ways for the kind of things that she's actually achieved. Are you looking forward to working with Alice?
Yeah, I mean, she is an absolute legend, is Alice. A remarkable young lady who has achieved so much in the face of absolute adversity. She's such a lovely girl as well. So I'm really looking forward to working with Alice on this. I think anybody that gets involved with the project will find her truly inspirational. Personally, I'm really looking forward to the project because I think it's going to be a really tough project. But I think the outcome will be absolutely, you know, having worked on the channel a number of times with a whole host of different people, what I do know is that when you get across the channel, it is life transformational.
Mm. And in terms of obviously the fuel that these select folk will be working with, nutrition vital to this side of things, will you be keeping a monitor on all of their intake of protein, carbohydrates and such like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, nutrition is everything. I mean, interestingly enough, the challenge here is not just about the swimming and the duration of time they've got to swim for. You've already spoken about the fact that it is cold, and the cold makes a real difference in terms of energy consumption, energy turnover. Add on top of that, there is always a fear factor here that when you're in deep open water, when you're in the middle of the channel, you can't see either coast. And it can be quite a challenging, quite a scary environment. So again, with that, there's a huge amount of energy expended as part of that. And so nutrition from an energy perspective, but also in terms of making sure that we stay on track for the challenge itself. And then, of course, add on top of that, you're in what is a relatively small boat in between your swims, which is bobbing about in the middle of the channel. And so seasickness is one of those things that can happen. So making sure that we've got the right nutrition at the right time is absolutely crucial for success in this challenge.
Well, my metaphorical hat is raised to yourself, Greg, Alice, and the rest of the team who will be working with this. I think it's a phenomenal sort of scenario. But it is actually with the underlying aim of ensuring that everybody, people listening to this, can actually try something new in their lives. And as we kind of head into the spring and summer and so on, it might be something that people could be inspired by.
Listen, absolutely right. I mean, it doesn't have to be the channel. I mean, the channel is an enormous challenge, but I think that anybody who's just thinking about challenging themselves, you don't have to sort of bow to this sort of public perception that if you're going to start running, you've got to run a marathon. Well, it's absolutely not true. You know, select your local park run and go along first and actually don't run it, walk it, just become part of it. And make sure that you're comfortable in that environment. You know, if swimming is your thing, then look at other events. You know, get to the local pool and set yourself challenges, or become part of a bigger challenge. You know, there's so many things that you can do. And the one thing that I would always say is that start small and progress, because by starting small, you're much more likely to be successful. That success then drives motivation to keep going. And as you accrue that success across time, the challenge gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you'll be really surprised what you can achieve.
Absolutely. Where can people find out further details, Greg, about this particular event?
The best place to go is the website, and that's optimumnutrition.com. And on there, it gives a story about the challenge itself, but also it gives details of how you can enter and potentially become one of the members of the team and join us on this epic challenge.
Fantastic. Professor Greg White, sports scientist, performance coach, and exercise physiologist. Huge thanks. And hopefully all goes well, Greg, and doubtless you'll come back and speak to us again about the successful completion of the task.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure, and I'm looking forward to you joining us for one of the swims. So get those. I know you haven't got your budgie smugglers on at the moment, but get them on and come and join us.
I've got to say, Greg, highly unlikely, but never mind. Thank you for the offer.
It's always there.
Using unregulated accountants, not knowing your deadlines, waiting to enlist help, not having your paperwork in order, not putting money aside to pay for your taxes as well. Okay, five of the biggest sins with respect to things not to do if you're dealing with respect to taxes, etc. But there's so much confusion around with respect to this. How do we sift through it? Well, we're delighted to welcome to the programme today Director of Professional Standards and Policy at the AAT. That's the wonderful Adam Harper. How are you, Adam?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Well, I suppose it's times like this where I'm quite grateful that actually I'm on PAYE from that point of view, so I don't have to worry too much about Schedule D because it's all sorted out for me from the workspace. But actually, there are many, many, many of us who aren't. And clearly, in terms of the financial year, this can be a very stressful time for them. Was that list of five deadly sins, if you like, the most common list of mistakes that people make in reporting their taxes and so on?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly recognise that. And indeed, through feedback that we get from our members, you know, we recognise that actually this can be quite a stressful process in terms of ensuring that as you approach the year end, that you've gotten your finances in order. But that's arguably why it makes sense to employ the services of somebody whose job it is to look after that for you and to do so in a way that gives you that level of assurance that all of your financial matters are being properly taken care of. It takes that level of stress away from it all.
And we've obviously crossed the threshold into April, of course, March 31st being the end of the old financial year, April 1st being the new one. Is that often seen as, much like other New Year resolutions, a good time as far as finances are concerned to ensure that everything's in place, obviously, for the year which ends March 2024?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that often one of the pieces of advice that our members would give to their clients and prospective clients is, look, don't leave it until the last minute. Utilise the advice and services that are there so that you can plan effectively throughout the year. That gives you that level of confidence that you're maximising the impact that your finances can have. And it's that business partner role that qualified accountants can deliver. And that's certainly something which we're seeing increasingly, particularly with the way in which you've got a raft of software solutions that are providing access to small businesses to be able to kind of like manage their finances more effectively. So yes, definitely that positive message about, look, don't leave it too late, use the year to properly plan and benefit from that support and service that a qualified accountant can give to maximize the potential of your businesses.
We spoke about the top five mistakes earlier. What about the best way to actually avoid making the mistake? Again, you've got to five sort of lines from respect to that. Would you like to just take us through that, starting off, of course, with number one, writing a business plan?
Yes, and I think that comes to the point I've already made, that if you're employing the service of somebody who is able to ensure that your finances are working effectively for you, that development of a business plan strikes that balance between, you know, you'll know your own sector, you'll know what it is that you want to achieve and what the opportunities are, but you need to also be in a position to know that financially you're planning to deliver on that effectively. So yeah, very important, but the role of a finance input in that is crucial. And that's where that advice will be worth its weight in gold.
Mm. Presumably, again, going on from that, it's also important to actually do the usual due diligence when it comes to deciding who you wish to actually handle your financial affairs. Much as it might be tempting to hand over to your much-loved uncle, sometimes that can end in disaster, and probably it's best, unless you've got somebody who's fully qualified, possibly one of the Association of Accounting Technicians folk, that could be very problematic, shall we say.
Yes, I mean, the research that we undertook identified, and understandably given the current financial climate, that 41% of respondents prioritised cost in terms of making that appointment, over checking their accountant's qualifications. But if you then look at the fact that 51% of the respondents subsequently have had to hire a qualified accountant to correct the mistakes of a previous unqualified accountant's work, there is some short-sightedness at play there in terms of making that decision. And whilst on the face of it, it might seem that somebody who's promoting the services that they can deliver at a level that obviously is cheaper than some of the their competitors. And again, I think there's a lack of awareness around the fact that actually you don't have to be qualified in order to be an accountant. That's certainly a big factor for us to try and raise awareness around that, that actually, you know, it isn't something that's required. So there are inevitably some fairly horrific horror stories that we have heard from our members who have done exactly as described in that survey in terms of picking up the pieces from businesses that had initially employed the services of an unqualified accountant to look after their finances and then sadly paid the price for it. And you know, they can be extremely costly and hugely damaging in terms of, you know, potentially bringing businesses to the brink of falling over completely. And I think that that's something which is often overlooked. So yes, essentially, do your due diligence, ensure that the person that you're appointing is fully qualified to be able to provide the services that they're saying they're offering to you. And that will give you a greater level of assurance that they're going to be able to deliver more effectively through that partnership approach.
Which neatly leads us to the other four tips, basically. Get organized now, get your data sorted, sharpen your business skills, and consider using a regulated accountant in terms of ways to hopefully provide a certain modicum of peace of mind, shall we say.
Yes, I mean, I think it's often looked at from the negative perspective about, you know, the compliance dynamics, looking to ensure that you're getting that service which means that you're paying the right amount of tax at the right time. But often it overlooks the fact that, you know, a qualified accountant will be able to provide advice and guidance that means that businesses are saving money. They'll be able to identify potential tax reliefs that are available. They'll be able to identify ways in which that, you know, businesses can make their money work most effectively from them. So it's not just about, you know, that compliance dynamic. That truly effective business partner will add real value and conceivably ensure that you're delivering greater efficiencies through your finances.
Therefore, how can people find out more information about the Association of Accounting Technicians? Do they just type in AAT and hope for the best, or is there another web address you'd suggest?
Well, I think certainly they'd get there eventually, but look, let's provide a shortcut so that it helps individuals to find out more how they can protect their interests and indeed find a regulated accountant. We have a web address, which is aatcomment.org.uk/accountable. If you put that in, that will take you to the information that you need.
Adam Harper, Director of Professional Standards and Policy at AAT. A huge thanks. And I'm always tempted to say those immortal words, happy number crunching, Adam.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren Radio. Congratulations. You've got great taste.